The views and comments expressed on the Space Show by its guests, callers, and listeners belong to them. The Space Show and its hosts serve only as a platform and are not responsible for others' comments or views. All topics discussed on the Space Show are primarily for educational purposes.
We choose to go to the moon in this vacation and do the other thing.
We have main engine start. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the Space Show with Dr. David Livingston. Broadcasting to 7 continents, consistently bringing you quality news and interviews with the best and brightest minds in the new space economy. Here is the founder and host of the Space Show, the man who best articulates the vision of space commercial enterprise, Dr. David Livingston.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday evening Space Show program, and I am your host, David Livingston, and welcome and thank you for tuning in. We have a very interesting program tonight with three terrific guests, and this is a birthday program or an anniversary program for the National Space Society, and you'll hear more about that in just a minute. Our toll-free number, for those of you who would like to call and contribute to the discussion, is 1-866-687-7223, but please note that the line is currently disconnected. I want to allow our three guests to make an opening statement about the National Space Society, and then I will open that line up for participation from listeners, and I will tell you when I open the line up. But for right now, it's offline for a few minutes, and please bear with us on that. You can also reach us by email, and I'll read your emails over the air, as I always do, drspace@thespaceshow.com. And the other way you can reach us is to go to our website, thespaceshow.com. All the way over on the far right, you'll see a menu for upcoming shows. And this is the first show listed, and that is our blog page for this this program and also our archive page. So if you open it up, comments are always down at the bottom. You do not have to be logged in to any program to post a comment or a question. And as soon as you post it and hit send or post or whatever the term is, I should get it and I'll be able to integrate it into our discussion. So those are the three ways to reach us. Toll-free line, 1-866-687-7223. The spaceshow.com website, upcoming shows, open the page up for this program and post away with your comments and questions, and email drspace@thespaceshow.com. A couple of other things I want to point out on our website. We do have a website newsletter. It is uploaded current every Sunday afternoon or evening after the Sunday Space Show program. All of our programs are listed in detail in that website newsletter. Plus, if you scroll down a little bit, you will also find that there are upcoming shows listed, and we're booking into early August right now for this year. So you can see what we have planned on that agenda. A couple of other quick things. There's a menu up on the upper left, and a couple of things there. Under the support menu is our Space Show store for T-shirts, coffee mugs, things of that nature that may interest you. And then there is a support item in that upper left menu. This tells you how to listen to live Space Show programs and archived Space Show programs. So the directions are pretty simple. And if you want to share this information with other listeners, please give them the link or copy the information. But this is how you listen to our programs. One real important thing I want to mention is that we are a 501c3 nonprofit with one O-N-E, GiantLeapFoundation.org, and we are able to bring you these programs free of charge and do what we do because many of you do financially support us. We thank you for that support. As a nonprofit, if you're paying U.S. federal taxes, you get a tax deduction. The same is true for those of you who pay California taxes. Our parent, which is the 501c3, OneGiantLeapFoundation.org, check it out. If you have any questions, email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com. Please remember we are trademark copyrighted. You do have permission to share our programming and to download them. There are a couple of small restrictions. One is nothing commercial with our programs. Number two, no edits, cuts, or clips, nothing up on YouTube or any other website, including your own. And written transcripts are not permitted, even if they're for your own use. And if you have any questions or comments about wanting to use something, just email me, drspace@thespaceshow.com, and I will be happy to respond to your request and see if we can work it out. And do look at our sponsor banner ads going across the website. Our corporate sponsors are instrumental to our bringing you these programs. And normally I would read sponsor messages, but because we have multiple guests for the show tonight, I just want to take a minute and thank our sponsors, which include the International Space Plan and also the Space Foundation. Orbital ATK is a sponsor, AIAA, and Celestis. And we certainly appreciate all of them very, very much, along with all the individual donors to the space show. And of our guest tonight, Jay Whitner, who all of you know, he is the president of the Integrated Space Analytics, and that's the company behind the Integrated Space Plan. And I apologize, I said International Space Plan. It's the Integrated Space Plan. And he is a founding partner of the Space Finance Group, and he currently is serving his fourth term as the National Space Society member of the Board of Directors. And he has been a member of the National Space Society and other advocacy groups since 1986. And he has participated in over a dozen of the National Space Society ISDC conferences. His bio is up on our website, and I urge you to read it in detail. He's done a lot of really cool things. Also, we have with us for the first time, live from Australia, Kirby Icon, and he is the Managing Director of Asia Pacific Aerospace Consultants, and this is in Sydney, Australia. And this company offers broad consulting services to the civil and commercial space industry, the evaluation of space-based capabilities to meet Australian needs, market analysis, industry analysis, risk management, and insurance advice. And he has also been very active in the National Space Society, and in fact, he is the chairman of the board, even though it's a U.S. company, and he is down in Australia. He succeeded Buzz Aldrin in this position, and we welcome Kirby to the space show. And with us also is Dale Scran, and he is the chair of the National Space Policy Committee, as well as the National Space Society's Executive VP. Dale is one of two NSS representatives to the Alliance for Space Development, and his full bio is up also on the website with the other two. I do urge you to read them in full when you get a chance, but they are all with us, and we appreciate having Jay and Kirby and Dale with us. And Jay, I'm going to start out with you, and this is the 30th anniversary of the National Space Society. Can you give us an overview of the 30 years and where the NSS is today and where it's going in the future?
Well, sure, David. And first, thank you for having this anniversary show for the National Space Society. We appreciate it. The history of NSS, in some respects, goes back over 30 years in that NSS was created by the merger of two organizations that existed previously. One was the National Space Institute, and the other was the L5 Society. And that merger occurred 30 years ago, which is the anniversary of the 30 years that we're celebrating today. And that was about the time, actually, that that I heard about NSS and joined up. So I was never a member of the earlier organizations, because I've only been around for 30 years now. NSS is unique, I think, in many respects, but one is that it has all the different primary elements, I think, that are needed in the space community for an organization of this kind. We do have a magazine, which I think is a very important component for spreading the word and attracting new members. It's called Ad Astra Magazine. It's won many awards over the years. Another aspect is that we have an annual conference called the ISDC that I'm sure we'll talk about later in the program. But many of the organizations do not offer an annual conference. We also have very good political observation of what's going on in the space community and provide input to the various agencies, and I'm sure Dale will talk about that a little bit later. Our online presence is huge. We have a very large, very sophisticated website that has an ocean of material on the website for everyone. So we have a lot of different components mixed in to help conduct space education activities to the public. And one aspect that we're seeing recently is greater acceptance of the whole idea of space settlement, that the space community seems to be embracing some of our ideas that we've held dear for a very long time. And perhaps Kirby might want to talk a little bit about the whole space settlement idea and how it relates to NSS.
Hi, Kirby. You want to pick that up, please?
Yes, thanks, David, and thanks also for the opportunity to be on the show. Yes, if we go back to the predecessor organizations, the L5 Society in particular always had a vision of human colonies in space, space settlements, and really at the time it was very early advocacy of something that seemed quite a way off in the future. I think what is so exciting now is that vision of space settlement is no longer something that's in the future. It's something that's actually happening right now. The announcements that we've seen over the last 18 months or so, particularly with SpaceX and Blue Origin, the different types of commercial space station being discussed, not just Bigelow Aerospace, but now Axiom Space and the other one with NanoRacks, there's so much real activity taking place that constitutes those first steps towards space settlement. And interestingly, a lot of that activity is taking place in the commercial realm, not just by government. And so that changes the tenor of the pace of activity, and it also changes the opportunity for an organization like the National Space Society to be out there not just advocating for settlement, but trying to identify the critical things that need to happen to lay that foundation for space settlement to be sustainable. And you really must have an in-space economy for space settlement to be sustainable. And so that's one of the kind of things that the NSS can do in trying to stimulate thinking around just what it takes. And, of course, it's not just technology and it's not just finance, but there are a lot of things that we will need to learn about long-duration space flight, long-term exposure on other planetary surfaces, raising crops, all manner of things will need to be thought about. And that's really one of the strengths of the National Space Society, is its membership is extremely diverse, and it comes from all those walks of life. And hence, it's an opportunity for a doctor or somebody who's in agriculture or an engineer, architect, whomever, from the general public to be a part of helping and securing that space settlement future.
Thank you for that, Kirby. And Dale, what is the role of policy influence making and I guess, you know, lobbying or trying to work the system to be open to things like space settlement and the commercial development? Because without being policy friendly, I mean, that's an even tougher uphill climb than what all the technical and economic hurdles might be.
So, David, let me just thank you for letting us all be on the show to celebrate the 50th anniversary of NSS. You know, one of the things the National Space Society does is to give a voice to citizens that are members of the NSS that are interested in space policy. NSS is obviously not a commercial group or a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. So we're nonpartisan, and obviously we don't endorse political candidates, but we work to educate our representatives and senators, in Congress, and to otherwise influence space policy. So we really operate on three levels, and I say this as the chair of the policy committee of the National Space Society, which is kind of in the background, but I'm proud to lead it. It's a very distinguished group that includes everything from ordinary space activists to people who used to manage large parts of the NASA budget. Anyway, we operate on three levels. On a high level, we focus on issues like space debris, or orbital debris, space weather, and planetary protection. And in that, on that level, which I consider has the broadest level of support, we work with groups like the Planetary Society and AIAA and with NASA, to generate, financial support for those kinds of policy issues. And, one thing we're very concerned about right now is developing support for a NEOCAM, which is a satellite that would sit inside the orbit of Venus and allow us to detect near-Earth crossing asteroids, such as the one that recently impacted in Russia. Another area that we operate on is we're part of something called the Space Exploration Alliance with a bunch of groups, such as Explore Mars, the Planetary Society. And the way I like to describe that activity, which is the focus of which is a blitz in February of each year, just called the Sea Blitz in Washington, D.C., which I just participated in relatively recently, is it really functions on the level of sort of general support for NASA, supporting the NASA budget, and supporting a balanced space program. And then a little more specifically, the National Space Society has joined with the Space Frontier Foundation and about 10 other groups, including Students for the Exploration and Development of Space, the Mars Society, the Tea Party in Space, the Lifeboat Foundation, and other groups to form the Alliance for Space Development, which the purpose of which is to support a specific annual agenda, which you can find on our website, www.allianceforspacedevelopment.org. And each year we have an annual campaign with four trackable objectives. And we just completed one of our major activities, which we call March Storm, which is a blitz activity in Washington, D.C. that I was spent a good deal of time organizing and participating in. So the thing that's interesting about the Alliance for Space Development is, of course, it's focused on the development and settlement of space, not on exploration. We believe that time has come to to expand the focus beyond just exploring space, to focus on having a space program that's sustained by actual commercial development in space. And in this role, we're working closely with commercial space firms to get the kind of legislation in place that will do that. So, 2 years ago, we were very active in promoting legislation favorable to space tourism. This year, our number one priority is to promote a what we call a gapless transition from the ISS to a future with commercial space stations in low Earth orbit. So I can talk more about that, but that's a nice overview, I hope.
Thanks for that. And listeners, I want to let you know that we have opened up our toll-free line if you would like to call in and talk to either of our three guests or comment about National Space Society or have a question in general. And the toll-free number, which is available now, 1-866-687-7223. We have just the one line. And if it is busy, please be patient. And as soon as the person using it clears the line, you'll be able to get in. And then, of course, email for your email thoughts, drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. Whoever wants to answer this one, where do you see the National Space Society in 5 years and 10 years? And do you do that kind of advanced sort of brainstorming and planning to sort of second-guess maybe what the hot issues or the trends or the directions will be in the future and how you want to direct the National Space Society toward that? Do either of you want to talk about 5 years out, 10 years out?
I'll be happy to take that, Dave, if you want.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so the National Space Society has a strategic planning committee. We have a multi-year strategic plan that we try to work to. We actually just started a new activity to kind of review everything and make sure we're going in the right direction. So I can't really say exactly how that activity is going to come out. But, you know, what I think the kinds of things we're talking about are, you know, what balance should we strike between political activity and, you know, sort of purely educational activity? You know, how much effort should we put into things like social networking and as opposed to some of our more traditional activities? You know, I think one thing's for sure, we're very, you know, very focused, and we'll be continuing to focus on developing, you know, a real, what we like to call a thriving economy in space, and supporting that in different ways, whether it be educationally, politically, or in other ways, because we believe that, you know, there won't really be settlement in space unless people can actually, you know, work in space and make money in space. So there's a really strong economic component to all this, and two issues that I expect you're going to see the National Space Society be very involved in over the next 2 years, in addition to the transition to a future of commercial space stations in LEO, are space tourism, suborbital and orbital, and now I guess we're going to have lunar tourism, which will be real exciting, and also space solar power. I think it's not widely known out there here and there, but there's been tremendous advances in space solar power, and I think over the next 5 years you're going to be hearing about that a lot more.
Gentlemen, you have a caller on hold, so I'm going to bring our caller in. Good evening, caller. Welcome to the show. Who are you and where are you, please?
This is Mark Hopkins.
Hi, Mark.
I'm from Santa Monica, California.
Hi, you want to...
And I've been on your show before. Look, I'm one of the guys that, one of the two people that negotiated the merger 30 years ago. I was negotiating from the L5 side, so this is 30th anniversary is very close to my heart. The thing I wanted to point out was that National Space Society is really about far more than just space. Americans used to believe in the American dream that each generation would be better off than they are now. But recent polls show that the average person no longer believes that to be true. And the reason for that is because lots of people, futurists, et cetera, have kept painting a dismal picture of the future, running out of resources, having, particularly if you take into consideration reasonable environmental constraints. But look, space can certainly solve this problem and restore the American dream, because the vast majority of the resources of the solar system in terms of energy and materials by orders of magnitude lie in space rather than on the ground. And what space settlement is really all about in the long run is tapping into these resources and greatly increasing the economic standard of living for all of humans. So what we're really, National Space Society is about, is creating a hope for prosperous future for all of humanity. It's not just space. It is really at the core of a wholesome future for everybody.
Mark, I'm really curious. What was the motivation 30 years ago of L5 to do this merger? Why did you guys want to merge the two organizations into one? What was behind that?
Well, on the L5 side, the other organization, National Space Institute, had far more resources than we did, larger membership, and also was receiving substantial amounts of money from aerospace companies, which we were not obtaining. So that's what our side. There's really three components, three factors in the merger. There was us, the National Space Institute, and the aerospace industry. And at the time, the L5 Society had a very powerful political capability of mobilizing grassroots support. And the aerospace industry was very much interested in harnessing that support for the space station, which was a program at the time which was really touch and go, something the National L5 Society supported strongly. But they wanted to harness our grassroots capability with the resources they could bring to it. And they were the primary source, or at least a major source, of revenue for the National Space Institute. And so they encouraged the National Space Institute to merge with us. And so it was a combination of those three groups that really put the merger together. And substantially, the space station was indeed saved, in part because of the grassroots support we obtained. At one point, the station survived by one vote in the Senate, so it was a close call.
Interesting. Guys, did any of you have any questions or want to ask Mark anything or bring him into any of your discussions?
I was curious, Mark, about who represented NSI back in the day when we were merging with them. Who was on their side that was running it?
It was Glenn Wilson. The merger discussions ran over 3 years. Really intense the last 2 years. That's about what I did about half my time. And that's about what Glenn Wilson, who was executive director of the National Space Institute, did about half his time. So it was not an easy merger because the culture between the two organizations was dramatically different. L5 was this grassroots organization, which was started by a ma-and-pa-type operation. Initial membership was 30 people, and the revenue, initial revenue, was 30 people times $20. And the National Space Institute was this very establishment organization founded by Wernher von Braun. Had substantial support since the beginning from aerospace companies. They started in 74, L5 started in 75. And so it was not an easy merger, but we did pull it off.
I have an email question. Maybe one of you want to respond to it. It's not directed at anyone in particular. It says many of the space advocate organizations seem to be nationally focused, but they have no activity and no local chapters or no meetings or anything that allows the membership to stay in touch with each other on a local, regional type of basis. You just stay in touch on the national level. I'm not familiar with National Space Society. I'm listening from England. I don't even know if you have a chapter over here. But is the National Space Society set up to have local chapter interest and connections, or is it all focused on nationally what happens in Washington, D.C., and do you have a chapter in the United Kingdom?
Well, we certainly have a network chapter. Go ahead, Kirby.
Yeah, Kirby should take that, I think.
Go ahead, Kirby.
The fact that I'm calling in from Australia does indicate that we're an international organization. We do have chapters all over the United States and multiple chapters in Australia, chapters in India, chapters in a variety of countries. So we certainly allow for that. We encourage it. And we have the ability to help local people set up a local chapter. It's a relatively low requirements in terms of administration. We're more keen to just have people on the ground, and it's certainly not, as you say, we're not Washington-focused or the US-focused. This is about humanity going out to settle the space frontier. So we are encouraging people from all around the globe to be a part of that, and we would actively like to get your details and help you set up a chapter in the UK.
Is there currently a chapter in the UK, or they don't have one yet?
I don't know off the top of my head. My inclination is to say that we don't have a chapter there.
Okay.
We have had a chapter there in the past. I think that, Kirby's right. We don't currently.
Okay. Mark, anything else you want to say, or should I clear the line to see if anybody else wants to call in on this anniversary show?
You know, I don't want to monopolize your line.
Hold on just a minute.
I'd like to add something to that response.
Okay, go ahead. Hang on just a minute, Mark, and let Jay add to it.
This is Dale here.
Okay, Dale, I'm sorry.
So this is not directly relevant to England, and I apologize for that, but to everybody else who's listening in, we not only have a lot of chapter activities, we have chapters all over the U.S., but we also do something called the August Home District Blitz, which is a project of the Alliance for Space Development, which is I would say predominantly, you know, NSS chapters and members participate in, but it's actually open to anybody, whether you're a member or not, to support. And what we try to do is organize teams in every congressional district and every state to visit the members of Congress when they go home in August for the recess. And we follow pretty much the same agenda as March Storm and the same agenda as the Alliance for Space Development, although sometimes there's tactical modifications. So, and just so you, you know, what those actual goals are for this year, they're to establish an ultra-low-cost access to space program based on a public-private partnership. That's one goal. The second goal is the gapless transition from the ISS to private commercial space stations, which I mentioned earlier. A third goal is to enable the development of a robust cislunar economy based on the commercial purchase of transportation services for crew and cargo and fuel and consumables derived from lunar and asteroid materials. And the last goal is to pass the what we call the SEDS Act, the Space Exploration and Development Settlement Act. It was introduced last year as H.R. 4752 by Representative Dana Rohrabacher, to make space development and settlement a part of NASA's official mission. Thank you.
Okay. Mark, anything else, or we want to see if anyone else wants to call?
Let me just get back to that British.
Okay.
Britain. Look, if you want to check out the location of our chapters, just go to our website, which is at nss.org. Just Google National Space Society, and you'll find our website. And it has a list of all the chapters there, and as well as lots of other things. So that's what I would do if you're interested.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate your call. Listener, that opens up our toll-free line. If you would like to call and talk to either of our three guests tonight, again, that toll-free phone number is 1-866-687-7223. Guys, this is my question, and I guess maybe it's more for Dale than for anybody, but any of you can respond to it. And my question is that there are so many forces tugging and pulling at our members of Congress for special interests for everything you can imagine, and then probably multiply that by 5,000, and we still don't have it all. How do you get attention for National Space Society items and for space? Do you have any tricks of the trade that you can share? How does space compete?
Absolutely.
Yeah, how does it compete? Because these guys are really, no matter who they are besieged by every kind of interest you can imagine.
Well, I think the important thing to realize is that space kind of exists in a to a large degree in a parallel dimension from a lot of these debates, and the same people, like say Ted Cruz, who appear to be literally ready to tear the throat out of somebody else on the floor of the Congress over some other issue, will turn around and cooperate with them pretty closely on space related matters. So there is a significant degree of bipartisan support for space. We just got something passed called the NASA Transition Act of 2017, which really was just the whole point of it was to have a compromise authorization bill that represented a sort of a true consensus about what we wanted to do in space. And it's not a perfect bill, but I think it has a lot of at a minimum it supports a balanced NASA budget that provides for low Earth orbit and beyond Earth orbit, human and robotic, commercial and non-commercial things. So it's a good bill in that sense. The other thing I would say about this is that we have found that it's very useful to focus on non-revenue bills because, you know, if you just go to Congress and say, I want $1 billion, that's a big haul. That's a big rock to lift. If you go in and you say, you know, I want some regulations changed to make it easier to make money as a space tourist company, that's much, much, much easier. You know, there may be no opposition, or the opposition may be a very you know, very sort of specific commercial opposition that can be overcome. So I'd say that's one of our big tricks, is to just to focus on things that have a lot of leverage but don't cost a lot of money.
Gentlemen, I have a caller on hold that I'm going to bring in unless either of the others want to respond to that lobbying question. Should I bring in the caller? Does anyone want to say something more?
Yeah, let's hear from the caller.
Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you, please?
Hi, this is Claire McMurray. I'm in Oklahoma. I write about chapters for one of the NSS newsletters. And I can tell you, we do not have a chapter in England, but if he can find or create three National Space Society members, we would be very happy to have a chapter in England.
So you need three members to form a chapter.
That's right. But if you don't know three people who are interested yourself, we can help you contact people in England who do belong.
Okay, and how can they get a hold of you, or do they need to get a hold of you, or can they just contact any of our three guests, for example?
They could probably contact Dale Scran or Jay Whitner.
Okay.
If they will look on the website, www.nss.org, and go to activities and chapters. There are chapter coordinators listed there. The international coordinator, who is Al Zaldua, can help them with that.
Are you in Tulsa or Oklahoma City?
I'm just a little south of Oklahoma City.
So I'm a Tulsan, living in California. Sometimes I wonder why.
Yes.
Because Oklahoma and Tulsa seem to be a lot more logical these days. But
keep trying to start a chapter in Tulsa, and if I were a little more active, I could do that, I think.
I have a lot of listeners that call and email the show from both Oklahoma City and Tulsa. And, of course, Congressman Bridenstine, I believe, is from the Tulsa district.
Oh, yes, he is a supporter of space.
Yeah, and he has a big following, so... And, of course, I'm still a Sooner fan, so I had to throw that one in.
Yes, I'm very close to the university in Norman.
Gentlemen, do you have anything you want to say with our caller?
Well, thanks for calling, Claire. It's good to hear your voice.
Well, thank you, Dan. No, I'm sorry. That was Jay.
Thanks, Claire.
That was Jay. Okay.
That was Jay.
Everybody sort of sounds alike when they're...
Yeah,
I
don't want to interrupt the flow. You all are saying interesting things.
Actually, could I add something, David?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd just like to thank Claire and the chapter in Oklahoma for all the good work they've done to meet with Representative Bridenstine, who's one of the key space leaders in Congress. Representative Bridenstine has put together something called the American Space Renaissance Act, which is an omnibus act that contains several hundred pages of ideas about how to move America forward in space. We are in a sort of continuous state of interaction with Representative Bridenstine's staff on how to improve different aspects of that. And I would just like to thank Claire and Representative Bridenstine for everything they've done to move space forward.
Do you guys lobby for him, for example, to be the NASA administrator, or you don't get involved in lobbying at that level?
If I could take that, Dale Scran here. This is a very tricky matter because, sometimes a campaign for a particular person can rebound negatively against them. So I'm not going to – this is not something that we would generally engage in a public campaign on. It usually isn't the kind of thing where a public campaign will be effective. I'm not going to say that we've never suggested a list of names to someone, because we have. And I think that if Representative Bridenstine does become the administrator, I think that would be a good thing.
Well, we'll see. I guess at some point we'll find out. Claire, anything else that you would like to offer?
No, I'd be happy to just listen now.
Thank you very much for your call. Good to hear from you again. Bye-bye. Listeners, that opens up our line. Actually, we're almost at the halfway point, so we're about a minute short. So I'm going to pause us and take us to break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. We do answer the toll-free line during the break, and again, it is 1-866-687-7223. Email remains drspace, D-R-S-P-A-C-E, at thespaceshow.com. And we'll be right back, so please don't go anywhere.
This show thanks its listeners for their generous support. The Space Show now joins forces with the One Giant Leap Foundation to further advance space education and the establishment of a spacefaring society and culture in America and the world. One Giant Leap Foundation is a tax-exempt organization with the purpose of advancing space education and development along with the Space Show. Your support of the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation helps get the word out as to why space is so essential and important to us all. So join with us by going to www.thespaceshow.com and clicking on the Support the Space Show button. Your contribution will help the Space Show and One Giant Leap Foundation in continuing its work and bringing you the programming you want free of charge on a continued basis. And remember, your gift to the Space Show is tax deductible.
The mission of the Space Show is to promote future economic opportunities, scientific discoveries, and medical advances for all humankind through peaceful and cooperative ventures in outer space. The Space Show intends to be the forum by which space exploration becomes an integral part of our culture, our economy, our country, our world, and our global vision, in which all nations unite in creating a thriving future through the enormous potentials afforded by off-Earth opportunities. The Space Show is committed to advancing integrity and responsibility, both in our off-Earth conduct and in the potential long-range consequences of our actions in space. The Space Show wants to make the dreams of space today the realities of tomorrow.
Welcome back, everybody. Part two of our National Space Society anniversary show, and we are really honored to have three great guests with us tonight, Jay Whitner, Kirby Icahn, who is down under in Australia, and Dale Scran. And we have a caller with us. So, caller, welcome to the Space Show tonight. Who are you, please, and where are you?
Hi, this is Scott Pace, and I'd like to hear... Glad to hear Kirby and Dale and Jay on the line.
They are on, and good to talk to you again, Scott. Guys, do you have anything for Scott that you want to talk about or ask him about?
Well, maybe Scott wants to tell us about his view on NSF.
Well, I mean, I go back to the period prior to NSF being formed. I was originally a member with a relatively low number of the old L5 Society. And that was in a period in the 1970s when, of course, we all felt bad about the end of Apollo and things weren't happening, and the L5 vision of creating settlements beyond the Earth was an interesting and actually at the time quite revolutionary idea, because you were looking at doing space travel and space development not for any sort of Cold War purpose, but for actual economic and civilizational expanse purpose. Science fiction people had talked about that for some time, but the idea of taking that mainstream into the policy and political world was something that was quite new. And so one of the things I tell my students, I'm currently a professor today, is that, well, sometimes the space activist community can be frustrating because there are lots of unrealistic ideas about how fast or how something can be done. At the same time, pretty much every innovative idea in policy and management, I think, is what can be largely traced to coming out of the activist community. The idea of a commercial role in space, the idea of human settlements in a fairly serious manner, the idea of energy generation in space, the idea of really much broader international cooperation, to include economic and private sector involvement, the role of non-government organizations. All these things did not come out of the traditional aerospace industries nor out of NASA. They really came out of the space activist community. So while you sometimes have to wade through a lot of stuff where you feel like, oh my God, I've seen this 3 million times. It also is a community that actually has generated the most really new ideas. And for that, I think we all ought to be grateful.
Jay, any comments about that?
Well, it's true there's a very diverse body of opinions about all space matters throughout NSS and the Planetary Society and other organizations. And I think that's inherently a good thing. We need different points of view. We need people that are focused on the here and now and short term, and we also need the dreamers that are looking a little bit more down the road. So I think it's all good.
I think that's absolutely right. Many organizations get stuck in just one point of view, and that's never been a problem for the activist community.
Who was Kirby? Did you want to say something?
That was Dale.
Oh, Dale, go ahead.
Yes, I was going to say that, you know, one of my goals as chair of the policy committee is to have NSS, continue the kind of thought leadership that Scott's describing, which is, one of the things that was very instrumental in the success of the Republican Party in the 60s and 70s was the development of position papers and think tanks. And the space movement has not been notably successful in doing that. One of my personal goals for NSS is for NSS to continue the foundation it's built in this in terms of developing position papers and things of that nature that will promote thought leadership. So I would invite anybody who's listening to check out the NSS website under NSS.org, www.nss.org. Look under NSS activities and chapters, legislative, find the position papers, and you can get a good idea of the kind of stuff we're doing. You go back, some of the papers go back a year or two, and they may be a little out of date. But, one of the goals here is to use NSS as a platform to bring together nonpartisan thought on the space issues. Thank you.
Scott, I have a question for you. And listeners, I might add that Scott will soon be returning as a guest to the Space Show, and I'm really looking forward to that. Scott, as host of the Space Show for 16 years, I have heard more ideas from space advocates and space cadets, using it as an affectionate term, than there probably are days in a year, probably days in 10 years. And some of the ideas are fringe and crackpot, but some are really good. And I always ask people, especially those that have ideas that I think have merit, what are you going to do to make that idea come to life? You know, you have to do something more to make it become real than come on the space show and talk about it. And there's this long silence. I mean, I have to break the silence. The person who has the idea doesn't know how to respond to that. So, is there a mechanism that you work with your students, or is there something, are there guidelines? Is there a way to take people who have decent ideas? And honestly, there's no shortage of creative ideas in the space advocate community, but there's a shortage of being able to do anything with them. What does someone do with a really good idea?
I think one of the first things they do is they should write it down. I know that sounds really trite, but it's amazing how much work has to go into taking a good idea, but then being able to communicate it. There are a lot of new venues today, more so than there was in the past. So you have standard policy journals like Space Policy, which is pretty academic. You've got journals like New Space, that Scott Hubbard is the editor of, that publish stuff on very much on economic development, space development. You have Space Law Journal. You have venues like Cometex Space Review as a website that Jeff Faust helped run. That actually puts out some, very good thoughtful pieces. Occasionally some ones that are less serious, but again, puts out some very thoughtful stuff. So the ability to share information and get it to other people is bigger now than it ever was. But it demands that you actually sit down and write. And it's amazing how much of a barrier that is. The second thing is to then go out and, you know, find like-minded people. And the web makes that easier than it used to be. But there's nothing that substitutes for face-to-face communication. So being involved in a organization of some sort, whether it's the National Space Society or Planetary Society or AIAA or something, where you can get other people to help you improve your ideas. I remember, you know, sitting around with the old L5 Society before the NSF days, where we were scratching our heads about how do we meet congressmen? You know, how do we do that? How do we set up an appointment? How would we go about talking to one? Has anybody ever met a congressman, you know, in a group of 20 of us sitting around looking at each other? You know, we created a lobbying organization, became Space Cause. We had a political action committee, Space Act. Folks like Dale got involved, and I'm really thrilled with the work Dale has been continuing. We actually crossed paths recently when he was in Washington meeting with Hill staff, and I had a chance to listen to Dale's pitch, with the staffers, and I thought it was great. I think the first step is to write. Second step is to get out of the house, and go link up with other like-minded people. And if you do, if you find a good idea, you try to find others to also, you know, pick it up and incorporate that into their own thinking.
Okay.
David, can I add something to that?
Absolutely. Please do.
So I think I endorse everything Scott said. That's a great answer, but I'd like to answer that question from a slightly different perspective. There are a tremendous, if people really have ideas about doing things in space, there is more opportunity to take those ideas and write up a business plan and raise money and start a company than there has ever been that probably at any time in history. The amount of venture funding going into space has risen dramatically over the last few years, and there's actually quite a significant number of companies that have been started. One company, for example, is you may have heard of Made in Space. It's located in Ames, they actually have 3D printers on the space station, and they have a partnership to manufacture fiber optic cable in space later this year. And that's probably 20 people. They're, you know, all in their 20s and 30s, and they're doing amazing things. And they're just one of, at this point, probably more than 100 companies with tremendously exciting business plans. So, I would recommend if you have ideas, you need to get hooked into the kind of the deal flow. Going to the International Space Development Conference that's hosted by National Space Society is one way to do that. Going to the New Space Conference that's hosted by the Space Frontier Foundation is another way to do that. But I think this is a very, very exciting time.
All good ideas. And, of course, crowdfunding opens the door for a lot of people. So something like that. Scott, do you have something additional that you want to add?
No, I should echo Dale's point. One of the things, we have a lot more, VC money flowing around. And, in the early days with NSS, NSS and community talked about commercial development because we knew that was important to be independent of government funding, which could, of course, go up and down with politics. And at the time, it wasn't clear how commercial development beyond satellite communications would actually ever occur. And so today, where you have multiple generations later, these companies and VC funding doing things like lunar cargo delivery, remote sensing satellites that are the giant populations of thousands of satellites, the Made in Space, what NanoRacks and so forth is doing, there's a lot of opportunities for people to gain leadership skills, not only in by being part of startup organizations, and also NGO organizations like NSS. If you're in the military, you'll get responsibility really young. But if you're in most big companies, it's hard to get responsibility and management experience really young. Opportunities to do that in the space world are with startups, and with nonprofits, like NSS and Planetary Society. So going out and getting experience and trying something, maybe failing, trying something else, doing a Kickstarter campaign, you never get smarter just sitting on the couch. You have to go out and do stuff, as Dale has mentioned, and the opportunities are bigger for that today than they ever were.
Okay. Thank you for calling in, Scott. We appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you. And listener, that opens up the line again, 1-866-687-7223. Guys, who have been some of the top leadership from NSS that have taken that leadership from NSS and gone into really outstanding careers in the space field? Can you identify some of the people who have made the transition from NSS supporter to having a terrific career in space?
Well, David, if I can answer that, I think Scott was a perfect example of that we've just seen. Had a senior role with the National Space Society and has been playing a senior role across space policy and space industry in general. Some of the other standouts, though, are Laurie Garver, who started off as an administrative person at the National Space Society, became its executive director, and, of course, ultimately became NASA deputy administrator. George Whitesides was also our executive director, went on to be president of Virgin Galactic. John Mankins is on our board. He's also been a leading light in the space-based solar power arena. There's been many people who have had formative parts of their space career working within the advocacy community, and in particular within the National Space Society. And it's quite remarkable the way that carriage of ideas has now flowed over into the shaping of the current industry, in particular the advent of such significant commercial forces, so many new companies, as Dale was just mentioning, starting up. In fact, I'm one of the founders of Deep Space Industries, and if you had come to me 10 years ago and said, would you want to be involved in an asteroid mining or asteroid resource harvesting company, I'd have said you were crazy, but the environment in 2012 seemed to be just right for that kind of thing. And so I think that the formative years that many people have spent in the National Space Society has then led them to take those ideas and implement them in the commercial realm, which again, as Dale's mentioned, there's so many startup companies out there. That wouldn't have been possible 10 years ago. It is a radically different environment, and it's one that really allows the formative thinking that people who have been part of the National Space Society have been able to embrace. And I'd also just like to add that the International Space Development Conference, which the National Space Society holds every year in May, it's a tremendous opportunity to not only get exposed to ideas, but to actually interact with those players. And I've been going to that conference since 1990, I've only missed one in all those years, and it's been exceptional in terms of the opportunity to air ideas, to learn important things, to meet people of all persuasions, senior managers, senior government people. It's just an extraordinary opportunity, and I think that has been part of that breeding ground for people to be a part of the National Space Society and then move on into senior executive positions in the industry.
Gents, we have another caller that wants to talk to you guys. Hi, caller. Welcome to the Space Show. Who are you and where are you, please?
Hey, David. It's Stan Rosen, currently calling from Ogden, Utah.
Hi, Stan. Good to hear from you again. How you been?
Doing fine. JJ asked me to call in tonight and suggest we were having a great program here, and it's been great so far and good to hear Dale and Kirby and Mark and others that have called in, Claire, and it's been a great program. So good going, David.
Thank you. You've been involved with NSS for a long, long time, right?
Oh, yes. I kind of like Scott, I started in the NSI world way back before NSS existed, and came to the merger with a little different perspective than the L5 group did. And I've been trying to carry a little bit of that forward as NSS goes into the future. And served on the board a number of times and helped Kirby for a while as the vice chairman of the board. So I still try to help Dale. I think I'm more a thorn in his side on the policy committee. But He does good work. A lot going on there. Anyhow, I thought I'd ask a provocative question since, you know, you had some time on the line. And I'd be curious to know what the panel thinks are the biggest threats now to achieving NSS's objectives. Not threats to the organization so much, but threats to this whole idea of space settlement, moving civilization into space the way it's been broadly described, and in an environment which is politically changing, and the economic issues of our times in which space is being looked at as a war-fighting environment, and the military is getting a lot more money for space activities. International space developments are occurring rapidly in many, many countries. We're trying to play both commercial, civil, the commercial world, of course, the original commercial world, that is the satellite communications business, multi-hundred-million-dollar business, is taken off, both in terms of large constellations and incredibly developed technologies for high-capacity satellites and large-scale constellations. I mean, it's an amazing world. So in this opportunity-rich environment, where are the threats to being successful?
Who wants to go for that? Jay?
You know, I can go first if you want.
Okay.
You know, Stan, thanks for calling in. You know, I wouldn't describe you as a thorn in my side, but just to my audience, you know that Stan Rosen is one of the members of the NSS Policy Committee, and recently I think he was right about something that you'll probably never hear about, but he did have a big, big influence on what we did. So I'd just like to take this opportunity to thank Stan for everything he's done on the policy committee over the last couple of years.
No, thanks, Stan.
As far as you're welcome. As far as the thing that I personally view as the biggest threat, I you know, especially not like short-term threat, is that the United States is in a very challenging financial environment. You know, if you look at the trends in spending, basically the discretionary spending has been falling as a percentage of the government spending. Spending by the government on research has been falling, and spending on so-called entitlement programs has been rising. And that's sort of a long-term, what they would call a secular trend. It's continued between Democrats and Republicans, and there's every reason to think as the population ages, it'll continue in the future. So I think, and I am the sort of the Cassandra here among a space of policy advocates, but I think the long-term reality is that the NASA budget will, in real dollars, get smaller. And over a 20-year or 30-year time frame, I think it's going to get significantly smaller in constant dollars. So I think any sort of policy planning that's based on assumptions about having large amounts of money added to the NASA budget is not reality-based. And I think the challenge for space advocates is to find a way to transition from a space program that's completely or mostly government-focused to one where the government is, taking a smaller amount of money and getting a lot more for that money, helping private industry and private citizens to move into space.
Okay, Stan, does that respond to your question?
It's a great answer, and I agree. And there are many challenges, and we could have that discussion all night. But I appreciate Dale taking on that answer. I would like to put in one plug before I free the line, if you would, David.
Sure, go ahead.
You know, I've admired the space show for so long. You've done a great job, and you're a fixture in international space communications and promotion. And the space show is unique, but the NSS is trying to at least follow your lead and be effective in communicating this grand vision. And in that light, Jay has done a great service in creating some opportunities for communications, one of which is to introduce Rod Pyle to the National Space Society. Rod is currently in the development of a book, which is partially sponsored by the National Space Society, which hopefully will come out in the later part of this year and really tell an exciting story in a very compelling way of all the great things that are happening that you know about and our listeners know about. But many of the other people who don't have the motivation to listen to the space show and really don't know what's going on and aren't a member of the space choir haven't heard about. And hopefully it'll be a vehicle to get this great and exciting story to many, many more people. So stay tuned for that.
Thank you, and I appreciate it, Stan, and all your nice comments. And Rod is a great friend of the Space Show. He's been on to talk about all of his books from time to time, and I'm aware of his book with the NSS, and we're looking forward to him talking about that when it's ready for publication or it's been published. And he will continue to stay a good friend of the program. So you have good people working with you and in support of NSS goals, and it's great to be part of it. So glad you called, Stan, and I hope to see you soon.
Good night, and I'll clear the line.
Thank you. Listeners, the line is open, but I've got a couple of emails to read to people. But the number 1-866-687-223. So here are a couple of emails. So this one's from John Mankins, who Stan mentioned just a few minutes ago. Hi, David. I'm not having luck calling in, but thought I would just send a sincere note of congratulations to NSS for its first 30 years. If I may, I would like to ask your panelists for their thoughts about where they hope the NSS will be in 30 years from now. So earlier I asked you guys for 5 and 10 years. John's a big, big thinker. 30 years from now, where do you guys think we'll be in 30 years? I won't be here to see it, but where do you think you'll be in 30 years?
Well, can we say L5 and 45?
What do you think? Will we have space settlement by then? Will you be turning towards something different?
Well, I have no doubt we will have space settlement.
So that's Kirby, right?
I think, I think it's, in my opinion, it's inevitable that we will have space settlement within 30 years. I won't speculate as to how big that will be, although you can take the ULA vision, which sees 1,000 people within 30 years in space. I believe that the commercial forces that have been unleashed can't be put back into the bottle. And I believe that once people all around the world start to realize the fact that these early stages of space settlement have started, they are real, and that space settlement is now no longer confined to the citizens of a few countries who had large space programs that would justify their involvement. Now, citizens from anywhere around the world who have exciting ideas and skills to contribute, they can be a part of it. And I think that this is the beginning of an upswell of global interest and support. And you already see countries like Luxembourg with their Space Resources Fund, the UAE with their interest, their Mars 2117 city. I believe that it can only be a question of how fast it takes off, not whether it will take off. And I truly believe that the National Space Society will continue to be at the forefront of guiding what needs to take place and establishing the framework, laying out the roadmap, which is one of the things that the Society has as a roadmap for the future. So I would see the individual chapters, the individual members, and the organization at a global level still playing a relevant role in space settlement.
Could I take that on too, David?
Yeah, of course. Go ahead, Dale.
Yeah, so as Kirby mentioned, we have something we call the Roadmap to Space Settlement, which you can find on our website, which is a great document. It's led by Van and John Strickland, really wonderful team working on it. We're not going to accomplish that roadmap in 30 years because the last step is interstellar settlement and colonization, and I don't think we're going to do that in 30 years. But I am very optimistic. I think that the environment has fundamentally changed. And I know that people like myself and anybody who's listening who's been following this for a long time, you know, can be cynical or skeptical. But we're now in an environment where, you know, people like Jeff Bezos, you know, one of the richest men in the world, you know, he really is the embodiment of the L5 vision. He believes millions of people should be living and working in space. That's his vision, and he's dedicating a large part of his fortune to making that happen. And, you know, he's not the only person who's dedicating a large fortune to making that kind of vision happen.
So I think we're in a fundamentally different world than we were even 10 years ago. And 30 years from now, I think NSS will be around, and hopefully we'll be dealing with issues like how space settlements can get sovereign representation in the UN.
That would be a good development. That it means that the basics are behind us, and we're starting to move forward with a more of a development program. Jay, any comments on you, where you'll be in 30 years, where the NSS will be in 30 years?
Well, I think the NSS has a lot of stamina. We're leading the way, as Kirby has mentioned, in space settlement thinking. And our role, I think, is going to increase as the entire space economy increases, over the coming decades. We're coming into the times that we've been dreaming of for many years. And this week, for example, SpaceX is planning to refly a Falcon 9 booster, demonstrating reusability. This is something we've been talking about for about 20 years, maybe. So our times are coming, and NSS is about to come into our own.
I have a couple more emails to read for you guys. So our friend Claire sent in an email following up her phone call from an earlier part of the discussion, and says, advice to would-be activists and entrepreneurs, never underestimate the value of learning what not to do, usually through an unhappy experience. It's an opportunity to change the approach and try again. So very, very true, Claire. And another comment is from Ken Murphy, and he said, as an example of direct activity by chapter, in this case the NSS chapter of North Texas, created an annual Moon Day event in Dallas that is the largest annual public space event in Texas, around 1,500 attendees in each of the last 3 years, 3 dozen exhibitors, 20-plus hours of programming, many merit badges, including a special STEM patch for the Girl Scouts, created a space scholarship that is distributed to the best space project at the annual Dallas Regional Science and Engineering Fair, thousands of dollars to date, and then collects space toys from a local toy drive, donating between 50 to 100 toys each year, and helps the BSA, I guess that's the Boy Scouts of America, with updates to the Space Exploration Merit Badge pamphlet, regularly speaks at local space-related events like Yuri's Night, NOM World Space Week, and others. And then other chapters have other activities, but there's always something to do. And Ken, of course, has spoken about his activities for his program on Moon Day on the space shuttle several different times. So he really has a first-rate program there. Any of you guys want to comment on anything Ken said or is doing?
Well, Ken's been doing a great job with that for a long time in his chapter, and that's one of the powers of chapters, is it helps the NSS reach out across the nation and beyond, as opposed to just having like a one central focus. So the chapters play a tremendous role, and Ken has been doing the heavy lifting for his Moon Day for a long time and doing a great job with it.
Are chapters represented in the national management or advisory hierarchy of the National Space Society? Like, is anyone from a chapter on the board or anything of that nature, or are the chapters sort of separate from the national?
We have a vice president of chapters who serves on the executive committee of NSS, who's sort of the liaison between the chapter network and NSS management. And at the ISTC conference, we have a giant meeting of the chapters that seems to go on well into the night with all the upcoming events and things the chapters are working on. So they're an integral part of NSS and have been from the very beginning, I believe.
I'd like to add to that we also have something called regional directors who are usually chapter activists. I believe there's 6 of them, and the idea there is to ensure that There are members on the board who are people who are not nationally famous individuals. As I say, they're usually chapter presidents or other chapter leaders.
You do have the ISDC.
If I could add.
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, David, I was just going to add that I think most leadership of the National Space Society has probably grown up through the chapter network. I, for example, spent 10 years as the president of the Sydney chapter. It's that experience that you gain at the ground force level that you then take with you up through the senior management of the organization. So I think there is always an important link between the NSS leadership and the activists in the chapters, and it's just part of our DNA.
Okay.
I was going to say, David, I was the secretary of the North Jersey L5 back in the early 80s. And the president of the North Jersey L5, and that's where I got my start.
Gentlemen, in the remaining roughly 10 minutes of our program tonight, you do have your ISDC conference coming up. It's in St. Louis. And I know we have a special program on ISDC coming up. I think it's at the end of April. What do you want to say to listeners about ISDC 2017? Jay, you want to start out and tell us a little bit about it?
I'd be happy to. But in terms of background, I don't know if we've mentioned yet that the National Space Society is an open organization, and we invite anybody listening to the program to join with us. We'd like to invite you into our family and to work with us and to build the future that we dream of. It does not cost a lot of money to join the National Space Society. And I think many space advocates are out there across the country and in other nations that are really interested in space, but maybe they don't know a lot of people that feel about space the way they do. And I know that when I first went to an ISCC conference, it was in 1989 in Chicago, it was like my first visit to a hometown I'd never visited before. Here were 1,000 people that believed in the same things that I believed in. And it was an incredible experience, and it's that way every year. There's all kinds of exciting topics, and speakers, and astronauts, and NASA people, and it's really something that you should not miss. This year, this fantastic event is happening in St. Louis, and it's happening in late May. It's from May 25th. To May 29th, and I would encourage everybody to come on out for the conference. There's many, many days of tracks and information and social events and speakers and meals, and it's really an incredible experience that will teach you a lot about space. You'll learn a lot of stuff. You'll make new friends. And it's great for networking if you're in the space industry or want to get into the space industry. So I can't recommend ISDC any more highly than the way I feel about it. It's just a great event. And I think that Kirby has been to 20 or 30 of these, and Dale has maybe been to a dozen or something. I'm not sure. What do you guys think about ISDC? How would you explain to somebody who hadn't been what it's like to be at ISDC?
Well, if I can jump in, I think it's remarkable the breadth of people that you get to meet there. First of all, the price is designed to be for the average member of the population. It's not for industry people specifically. It's for the general populace, so it's priced for that. But you get the opportunity to mix with extraordinary people. Buzz Aldrin has been at most of the conferences in recent years. We've had people like Elon Musk. Last year, I remember having a conversation with the president of Blue Origin. Anybody who goes to those events has the opportunity to interact with those people. And that, for somebody who goes to a lot of international industry events, you don't always have that opportunity as a regular attendee of the event to brush shoulders with and converse with people like that. It's really quite unique.
So if I could add to that, Kirby, in this particular upcoming ISDC, those distinguished speakers will include William Gerstenmaier, the Associate Administrator for Human Exploration and Operations Director at NASA, who's widely recognized as the person most responsible for leading human spaceflight in NASA. People like Jane Poynter, the Chief Executive Officer of Worldview Enterprises, Jim Cantrell, the Chief Executive Officer of Vector Space Systems, or Vector Systems, Thomas Stafford, I think he needs no introduction as an astronaut, and also the Director General of the European Space Agency. So it's a very distinguished, and that's just a sampling of names. So it's a very distinguished set of people. I'm really jazzed about going there. I always learn new stuff, and it's always really a great experience.
Are different topics or segments there? Like, do you have like launch vehicles? Do you have like small satellites? A special thing on, say, space settlement? Another one maybe on human space flight or policy or property rights? Are there different? Is it broken down in segments and topics like that? Anyone?
Well, yes,
absolutely. I mean, it's broken down into a series of tracks. It varies from ISDC to ISDC. Each one, has separate management, and it's sort of tactically updated depending on the mood of the committee running that conference. But usually there's a track on space solar power and space settlements, space transportation, sometimes Mars, the moon, asteroids, space elevators, space medicine, and other things as well. So check out the website.
There's still space available to go? We're not up on any hard deadlines or anything like that for registration?
Absolutely. Sign up now. Go for it.
What hotel is it at in St. Louis? Do you remember?
Let me just tell you. I'll get back in a second on that. Oh, it's at the St. Louis Union Station Hotel.
Okay. Guys, we're approaching the end of our program tonight. What should we have talked about regarding the National Space Society? What would you like to say that maybe we've missed or we've forgotten to discuss? Now's your chance to put it out there for everybody. So we'll go through all of you. So Dale, why don't this time I start with you?
Well, I mean, okay, I guess this is kind of taking me aback. And part of my problem is that I'm thinking a lot about SpaceX's attempt to reuse Falcon 9 first stage this coming Thursday. And I think a lot of us are, this is going to be a very important event. We wish them the best of luck. If they fail, I think, we encourage them to continue. If they succeed, I think the National Space Society is going to be taking a leading role in trying to get NASA and other organizations to relook at their activities to ensure that we're really taking advantage of the technology that companies like SpaceX and the Blue Origin have developed.
Okay. Kirby, what do you have in conclusion? Anything we should have talked about that we've forgotten or omitted?
Well, I think the key thing for me is, first of all, that the National Space Society is a public advocacy group. So it exists to allow any average citizen to voice their support for space settlement and the exploration and development of space. So we have been existing for a long time, and 30 years for the organization, plus years for its predecessor. We were talking about something that was further in the future, but that future is pretty much upon us right now. So it's a very exciting time for people to be a part of that. And I just want everybody to realize that this is an organization that embraces the general public.
Okay. And Jay, for you?
Well, I think that every member who, in the, of the spatial listening audience would be well served to be a part of NSS as well. The thought processes, I think, are similar. The passion is there for the same things. And it's an educational experience, and it's a lot of fun. So I would encourage everybody who's listening, if you're not currently a member of NSS, join up and come meet us in St. Louis at the ISDC. You'll have a great time, and you'll want to be part of it forever.
Meet me in St. Louis, right?
There you go.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for talking about NSS, National Space Society, for the past 30 years, and also talking about that it's going to be around and it's going to be a strong, influential, and positive force for commercial space development and space development and exploration on its own for at least another 30 years and probably a lot longer than that. So at some point, maybe in that 30-year future, the National Space Society will have its first off-Earth chapter, maybe in orbit, you know, at an orbiting space station or in cislunar or maybe on the moon or who knows where. But I think, I hope I'm around to see that first NSS off-Earth chapter. And while nobody mentioned that, my guess would be in 30 years, probably closer to the 30-year timeline than, say, closer to the 15-year timeline. But I think you will see NSS chapters located off Earth. That would be my guess in terms of Stan's question for what's ahead for NSS in 30 years, off Earth chapters. Guys, I want to thank each of you very much for being with us tonight. I really appreciate it. I know the listeners do, too. For those of you that called the Space Show, certainly want to thank you for calling, those of you who sent in emails as well. And everybody, if you're at ISDC, make sure you find everybody and say hello. And everybody have a great rest of the week. The week is young, lots of time left to do great things this week. So go do it. Keep looking up. And again, special thanks to Jay, to Kirby, and to Dale for a great space show discussion on a great organization, the National Space Society. Good night, everybody.